everybody. I am Pat Allwell, Managing Director here at Strategus Research Partners with my two colleagues, Ryan Brinsky, Todd Sohn. Ryan, congratulations. Since the last time I saw you, you've got some accolades in the press for the excellence of your work. Todd, the excellence of your work is just understated. It just goes on a daily basis. But first of all, I wanted to ask about one thing. As the markets here soar after the election, I've been traveling for the past several weeks in Asia, so I'm going to cover that. But I read in the Wall Street Journal that the public enthusiasm for the stock market, based on flows now, is the highest since 2008. How worried should we be about that?
Yeah. When you look at equity ETF inflows, we've done over $235 billion in the last 3 months. Now, a lot of that's come in the last two weeks. And in the data set that I track, that's the highest tally basically over a three-month time frame for equity ETF inflow. So there is certainly some more aggressive behavior developing, some spirits stirring, I'd say, within the equity market. And you specifically see it in some of the leverage corners, especially single stock leverage volumes. And that's going to be your Tesla, Coinbase, crypto type plays. So I'm very mindful of it. You had a real big overbought condition for a lot of corners of the equity market. I don't think it's entirely unreasonable to suggest some sort of pause here into the end of the year. Does it develop?
Do markets really pause, or is that just a polite way of saying that?
I think that they go down a little bit.
Okay. Pause. I don't know. It's like a 747.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't pause.
So, Ryan, what about profits?
Yeah. I mean, corporate profits have remained strong. We're looking at the third quarter is just about wrapped up here. We're looking at about 8.8% growth. That's better than what the July 1st estimate was of 8.5%. It's also going to be the third quarter in a row where we've exceeded the estimate at the beginning of the quarter. I think if we look out, as obviously the question is, you know, what is next year going to shape up to be? Right now, it's looking around 12 to 13% earnings growth, which, you know, is overall a strong year. So corporate profits continue to hold on. The way I think about it is corporate profits are the glue holding the economy together. As long as profits hold up, employment likely can hold up. And then as long as employment holds up, you see consumers continue to spend. So, you know, so the election's adding some volatility here. I think overall the market is on sound footing.
What about the argument that this is finally the time for small caps? And since the election, particularly with the reduction of tariffs, which should hurt exporters and imports in a big way, which is largely the bigger companies, they're now ripping. Any observation? Profits up or?
Yeah, I mean, small caps, you know, it's interesting to me. I'd say we've been a little, I personally have been a little more negative on them just because the fundamentals haven't caught up to those of large caps. They continue to, earnings growth continues to lag behind. We've seen some upward revisions. One of the things that I'll point back to is when you look at the, you know, I'll call it the Trump 1.0 administration, small caps did quite well in 2017 on a relative basis to large caps. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that we had a major tax cut in 2017, and there was a huge lift to earnings because of that. When the tariff talk really began to ramp up in 2018 and 2019, the relative performance of small caps turned, and they actually began to underperform again. I think kind of one of the things that kind of goes underappreciated is the fact that small caps still have their supply chains are still tied to international economies. They're still, and so tariffs have an impact on them, despite them being more domestic focused on the sales side of things. I think this is also probably the reason why financials have actually hung in there post-election, because obviously they don't deal with the supply chains. Tariffs are not necessarily going to impact them as much, and the deregulatory environment that's largely expected under a Republican sweep should continue to benefit.
It's the deregulatory environment that's helping the banks the best. I saw in the Herald today that U.S. banks are now better capitalized than the Europeans, which doesn't say much. It's been absolutely terrible. But it just seems to me that it gives them a little boost. I have to introduce the Basel standards, which are very, very strict.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly playing a big role. I would say they still have some of the, especially on the smaller side of things, they still have some of the commercial real estate overhang. There's a big difference between, and in the office space, there's a big difference between Class A real estate and Class B and C. And a lot of the smaller banks have exposure to the B and C real estate. I'd actually kind of turn that around to you, because obviously you were in Asia. you know, more recently. I'd be curious to, you know, what you saw, what you see in Asia when you were there.
Well, I want to say I've never gone on a street gone out of the office in my entire life. And this was it. And of course, it was during the election season. I sort of knew that. I didn't think that the election would offer as much drama as it did, or the lack thereof. But let me share with you, I went to Tokyo, I went to Shanghai, I went to Indonesia, and then I ended up in Bali and Singapore on the way back. It's a long way, and it's really, you look at it,
it's very far.
I think that the difference between Shanghai and Jakarta is like New York and Chicago. It's not.
It's an eight-hour flight.
And they have airlines in China that are quite nice. The fares are quite nice. They had Eastern China Air and Western China Air. And I went on Eastern China Air, and my flight out of Shanghai was largely empty. The economy was full. There was nobody in premium economy. Nobody. There might have been three people in business.
Was it challenging to get into the country, or were you?
We're talking China?
China, yeah.
I was stopped at immigration a little bit by an officer who told me I didn't have the proper visa. He was incorrect, but he kept me waiting about 40 minutes. It was an uncomfortable 40 minutes. I didn't know what exactly would happen. There were some of my colleagues here who bet that I'd end up in some sort of gulag upside down in the Jack Ma room, but that didn't happen, and they let me in because you can come in if you have a return ticket out. And he had to make sure that he was comfortable with that. To be honest, on the way back, which I'll talk about a little bit, getting to JFK is entering the wrong end of the Alimentary Canal when it comes to the United States. The guards there, the immigration officers, were rude. I got on the wrong line, and at JFK, you know, you have to pay for your little cart basket. Yeah. None of the other airports in Singapore or in Bali or in Indonesia or in Shanghai or Tokyo, they charge you for those.
Yes. Carts. Well, let's actually talk.
I'm not done with my carts yet.
I was going to stop you there. I want to hear what you saw on the ground there, though. EV vehicles in particular.
Okay. Well, I'll leave out Tokyo for a minute, which is a really sparkling diamond. Shanghai is an amazing city. If Chicago represents in the United States the architectural marvels, whether it's the Wrigley Building or the Sears Tower, Shanghai has all these cool towers, like the Television Tower, which is the iconic tower, and every other building is really cool, but they're built on a corporate campus. It's not like Manhattan, where it's cheek to jowl building to building, so it's all spread out. They claim that their vacancy rate is about that of Manhattan, about 21%. I'm really skeptical. I didn't see a lot of foot traffic. And if you look up at the buildings, it looks like the upper floors, not only lights don't come on at night, but they were dusty. So I'm skeptical. If you go into a mall, which you could see at ground level, there were some malls that I went in, they were half empty. They had no tenants. A luxury mall next to my hotel, I stayed at the Shangri-La, across the street is the Ritz. And they have a really fancy mall. It would be the equivalent of the Short Hills Mall in New Jersey. They had a Rolex. They had a LMVH. They had a Tiffany. And that was empty. I spoke with the manager of a Hermes store there, and she said that business was very difficult, that the people in Shanghai were really low on their spirits, and that her sales were flat. She said that most of her competitors, and that's what she claimed, down double digits. So if the luxury goods makers are on the front line of demand, demand continues to be soft as of last week there. Maybe things are picking up. I didn't see it. And you get the sense the way, for example, I was there over Halloween. They're clamping down on Halloween because the kids, at my age, anybody less than me, I call a kid. But these were young women or men in the 20s. It's on the other side of the river there, the old colonial place, the French Quarter. They were pulling them over to the side and asking them to remove their makeup.
Was there any talk of, obviously we've seen a little bit of Chinese stimulus coming through, but one of the things that, you know, we have been looking for is stimulus on the consumer side of things. Have any of these individuals talked about, you know, this, the consumer ultimately?
And they're very, you know, talking to a guy who's an American who doesn't speak Mandarin, they're very circumspect into the conversations that they might have with strangers. So I didn't ask it. I thought it might be rude and dangerous to ask that. But I would share with you the nature of the Chinese stimulus is to bail out the municipalities that have overspent their money by developing all these real estate projects. And as the real estate collapse continues, I think most recently prices were out. They might be down, I think, about 6% year on year. Deflation continues. I got the sense that it's a wholesale transaction, not a retail transaction. There was some talk that they might send checks out to the Chinese, but they haven't done that.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, to bail out the municipal authorities. Todd, you tell me. It seems to me that the market there is now in correction territory.
Yeah.
The Chinese ETFs that people rushed into are now down over 20%.
Yeah. I mean, here's a chart of the iShares MSCI China ETF. So you're going to get the whole exposure, the mainland Hong Kong exposure, H-chips, B-chips, red chips. You've had a pretty good shakeout after the initial little sugar high. And so I know the breadth data there has been historically good, which if it was a normal market like the U.S., that tells us we want to be buyers, but it's a little tricky here.
Can I ask a question on that chart over to the far right there, the login, where it's 45? I always thought that gaps have to be filled on a chart. Does that mean that the market can go down?
Close the window.
I mean, gaps more often than not do get filled, but I'm not going to, not by the rule, I think, because then we'd still be saying we have to go back to 2009 lows for the U.S.
So listen, I don't know anything. If I knew a lot, I'd be sitting someplace fancier than this little cramped office that we have here. But it seems to me that the China trade was a trade.
Always a trade. China's a trading vehicle, not an investing vehicle to me. And the history shows that, right? 0% return over the last 32 years of data. And maybe there's a couple of winning companies there, or maybe companies here in the U.S. with exposure to China that have worked out well. But I don't see China as a long-term investing vehicle.
So a couple of months ago, there was written speculation in the paper that the debate as to whether or not China has lost money for more money for investors over the past several years, or whether or not Cathie Wood had done so. I guess Cathie Wood now is no longer in that position because her names are really powering.
Yeah. I will, Ryan will laugh at this. I like the ARK funds as a Trump proxy because they're very heavy Tesla. They're very heavy Bitcoin and certain semiconductors, and they're very heavy crypto derivatives like Coinbase and Robinhood. And so if you are looking for a place of a stronger regulatory framework, more acceptable regulatory framework, it's going to be in crypto, and these funds should benefit from that.
Is Cathie Wood now up for the year? Tesla's now up for the year.
Tesla's up for the year. The flagship fund from ARK is up for the year. There's a year-to-date chart from the looks of it. Now it's a matter of, okay, did flow start to come back? We'll see.
I think
from Ryan's the earnings standpoint, is a lot of these companies still are unprofitable, right?
Let me back up a little bit. My first leg of my trip over there was to Tokyo. Tokyo had an IPO of subway system while I was there. It's the biggest IPO since SoftBank. Had a yield to it, and it was, I think, 12 times oversubscribed, had a big bounce of it. I think it's up 47% on the day. The remarkable thing about the Tokyo subway system is, number one, you notice how spick and span it is. Number two, they have actually cloth cushions on the subway seats. Think about that relative to New York, cloth cushions. The bathrooms, I went into one of the bathrooms, it was immaculate. It might as well have been a bathroom off the Four Seasons in Boston during a convention. It was just absolutely immaculate. And the trains run on time. You consider what goes on here in the United States with our transportation authorities, particularly here in the MTA, loses billions and billions of dollars. Can't build anything on time at budget. The Japanese really get that. So I was really impressed with that. In both cities, in Shanghai and in Tokyo, food is cheap and rents are cheap. I was told that you can get a nice apartment downtown Tokyo, might be a Studio Plus, they might call it. It's not going to be like a New York standard of quality, but still far more reasonable than it once was, about $1,500. And you can get want to step out a little bit, take the subways in Shanghai, you can get a reasonable apartment for much less than that. Food is cheap. Both places, it's cheap. Service level in Tokyo is amazing. I'll give you an anecdote. I stayed at the Imperial Hotel, and when I checked in around 4 or 5 o'clock, I asked the concierge if he'd make a recommendation for a restaurant for me, which he did. He asked me if I liked omakase. I know I'm mispronouncing all these words, but I said, fine, yeah, I'll try it. And it was in the pizza district, so I got my bags in, went back down. He made the reservation. I walked over. He gave me a little map, circled everything. He showed me on his computer what the front of the restaurant looked like. And I went down, made my right. It was filled with lots of people. The streets are narrow, a little bit like Times Square without the filth. And out of the blue, after wandering around for half an hour, I said, I'm just going to go find a place to eat. Came the concierge, who was older than I was, and he was wearing like a tuxedo kind of outfit with tails, running after me to find me because he felt that he gave me the wrong directions because the restaurant had called him and told him that I didn't show up. Then he took me by the hand to the restaurant and introduced me to the owner, and I sat down and had my meal. And I, you know,
Service, excellent.
Give him a little tip. He wouldn't take a tip.
Well, it wasn't his fault that you got lost.
Did you pay with yen or a card?
I paid with at the restaurant or with
you?
I had yen.
Was it mostly a cash experience for you, or did they were you able to use Apple Pay?
No, I would say mostly everything's electronic. It's even more so in Japan. In fact, I still have this app that's probably following me around.
For sure.
But what is it?
You have nothing to hide, though, so.
It's nothing to hide until they find out about Alipay. Alipay in China, it drives everything, right?
Yeah.
It drives, but if you make a charge and you use your record charge card, they charge it 3% more. You can use an Uber over there, or the equivalent's called Didi, which was, if you remember, Uber. And that's pretty good. And that's cheap, too. And cabs are cheap in Shanghai. And I'll talk a little bit about one of the reasons why I was particularly interested in Shanghai was the electric car stuff. I'd read in Bloomberg all the other stuff that maybe oil demand's down because of the EV explosion in China. May or may not be. But they're coal-driven cars over there because most of Shanghai's power comes from coal. So people hook up and they think they're doing the right environmental thing by hooking their electric car to a coal plant. There are very, very few petrol cars on the road. The motor scooters, which pollute the air in Jakarta, are all electric. Shanghai. So the air, I thought the air was clean. People said it was. I didn't find that at all. The variety of electric cars is incredible. So there's no corporate governance over there. So if you made any electric product, you said, it's a good idea, make electric cars. And you saw that. And some of the gadgets they had over there, like I saw the new Huawei phone that folds up, it's like half the size of this iPhone, it's about the size of this wallet, and it folds up into a big screen. It was still expensive. It was about $1,000 US, but it was one of the coolest things I had seen. I don't know whether the Apple is in.
So it's interesting you bring up EVs because the EV tax credit is one of the things that's largely expected to be rolled back here when the Trump administration takes over. Was there any talk of, you know, bringing those EV cars to the United States, or are you?
I did ask a couple. I went to a Lee Motors place, and they make a high-end hybrid SUV. And I wanted to touch. I wanted to close the doors. I wanted to touch the leather. I wanted to touch the knobs. I was like an adolescent at the New York Auto Show that you're just touching the car left and right, and you're feeling the leather. It was really nice, really nice. And if you close the door, it was really nice. Those vehicles were very expensive, $70,000. And she told me she only sold two last month. Their partner sold two. So that struck me as a low number of sales.
Yeah, but that to be fair, that's on par. So that price point, it would be on par with Tesla.
Well, Teslas were a little bit less expensive, but these were minivans. They were not all electric. They were hybrid minivans, but they had some really cool features. You pressed a button, every seat, including the driver's seat, fell flat. So I guess if you're on the way to Guangdong and you run out of a charging station, you can sleep in the car for a period of time. So I just thought the cars were really cool. I did see BYD, and I saw their 7,000. BYD, Lauren, I don't know whether you have a picture of that where I was filling it up at the place there, but BYD said their sales were really brisk. Now, I saw their $7,000 car, which is like a Corolla in terms of build quality. The range is only about 150 miles. Now, remember, the thing with EVs, when they give you their range, take that number and diminish it by 10%. So 90% of whatever they're telling you is their effective range. And they also sell cars in China where they you don't have to worry about the range anxiety because you go into this gas station or what they call a gas station, and they take out the battery, give you the one. But that EV was selling quite well. But again, at 150 miles or 135 miles, it's really not what Americans want because we just don't have the transportation systems.
We don't have the charging stations,
especially if you're going to be going cross country.
Well, I don't know. I mean, trains over there are so fantastic.
What did you think of the bullet trains?
I saw the bullet trains from my hotel room in Tokyo, but I
didn't see the
bullet train. But again, we hear all the time that the Swiss really know how to run the trains, or it's like a Swiss clock. Let me tell you,
they're immaculate.
Very, very. It was clean. It was so clean. It was so unbelievably clean. And they have no homeless people. There's nobody shouting in the middle of a subway car. So I started shouting.
You're the crazy New Yorker.
So I guess I don't know. I did also get my haircut.
Oh, for yeah.
Shanghai by the coolest barber over there. Now, again, the people I talk to, I'd also tell you, everybody wants to come to the United States. They travel here or they'd like to stay here. That's particularly true in other parts of the world, but they really want to come here. They want to learn here. They want to explore here. They want to be open here, and they can't really.
So let's hear about this hair, because clearly they didn't dye your beard.
No, I think that the number one buyer of hair dye in China is the Politburo, but I didn't dye it. But I went into this guy. He had he was taller than me. He had a big curly black beard himself, which is unusual among Chinese. And he had like curls in it. And he was wearing Carhartts, flannel shirt, and Converse sneakers. Think about that.
It's pretty hip.
All American brands. And the Apple iPhone is still not just a phone. It's also a luxury item. The Tesla in China is a luxury item. This is a status call as well. We might not think of the Apple iPhone immediately as a status symbol, but it is the Tiffany product when it comes to the Chinese. It's considered to be the best. There's a high tariff associated with it. But they like American brands. And as I said, they would like to come to the United States. So though I was interrogated by the immigration officer that I might overstay my visa in Shanghai and somehow, you know, work the underground economy in Shanghai, I don't think there are many Westerners or other folks here
who are itching. Before we wrap it up, would you return at some point to any of these countries?
Oh, I'd love to. I thought it was great. I mean, I flew Singapore Airlines back, and Singapore Airlines staff is as wonderful as they are. I have a friend of mine who's a journalist there, covers things for one of the large news weeklies in Shanghai, in Singapore. And he told me that if you are dating a Singapore stewardess, it's the equivalent of like dating a rock star. They were great. The planes were great. Everything was great. That flight from Singapore to JFK at 18 and a half hours is the longest allowed commercial flight. And I don't care whether any seat lies flat, lies up, lies. It's a really long, difficult flight.
What movies did you watch?
I didn't watch. I don't think.
Raw Dogged it the entire time.
The movie selection.
Stared at the back of the screen, back of the seat.
I had a book, of course, on James Friedman wrote a book. I can't remember the title, but it's about the financial crisis associated with Citibank. And I'm up until the fact when sugar prices collapsed in the early 20s, which almost brought down the bank. Then Sheila Bair once told Christopher Owen and I on an Amtrak train, which Amtrak never works on time, but we're coming in from Washington. And unfortunately, I recognized her. So we sat down next to her and we're chatting about financial crisis and her experience with the financial crisis. And she made the observation that you cannot have a financial crisis without Citi being involved. I think that's true. And you read this book about the history of Citi. They've been involved in financial crises, bailed out one way or another for the past 100 years.
Did you meet her at the Milken Conference?
No, I didn't meet her at the Milken Conference. Speaking of the woman I did meet at the Milken Conference, was the mayor of Tokyo, who, if the LDP was not thrown out for corruption, not because of inflation, but corruption, she might have been the first female prime minister in Japan. That was not to be. And to be honest, I think that with all the gnashing of the teeth and pulling the hair with Harris, I think America will vote for a female president, but she has to be conservative. She has to be like Margaret Thatcher. She's got to be tough as nails. I don't think they want somebody who's going to be ill-defined, considered to be soft. I think that it's going to be
awesome.
All right. Well, I guess that's a wrap for this episode.
Joe Rogan, you're marking.
I think we'll nix that part.